present Michael Williams as Charles Pooter and Judy Dench as Paddy Pooter in Mr. and Mrs. Nobody by Keith Waterhouse, adapted to radio by Gordon House. We're at the Laurels Brickfield Terrace Holloway in the north of London. It's the spring of 1888.
Why should I not publish a diary? I have often seen reminiscences of people I have never even heard of, and I fail to see, because I do not happen to be a somebody, why my diary should not be interesting. My only regret is that I did not commence it when I was a youth. Signed, Charles Pooter, The Laurels of Brickfield.
If my husband can entertain hopes of publishing a diary, then so may I. After all, it is not as if my dear Charlie were a somebody. He is, alas, thanks to the good nature that holds him back, no more of a somebody than is Mrs. Charles Pooter, The Laurels, Brickfield Terrace. My dear husband, Charlie, and I have just been a week in our new house, The Laurels, Brickfield Terrace, Holloway. I hate it.
A nice six-roomed residence, not counting basement, with breakfast parlour and a nice little back garden.
The back garden runs down to the railway. Every time a train passes by, the windows rattle. Smoke billows in through every crack, and every stick of furniture is coated in cinder dust.
After
my... If that were not enough, there is evidence of rising damp in the scullery. All Charlie has to say on that score is...
When we are settled in, Carrie, I may well try my hand at growing mushrooms.
They'll come up toadstools.
After my work in the city, I like to be at home. What's the good of a home if you are never in it? Home, sweet home. That's my motto.
For £1 a week more, we could have had a pretty little villa near our old home in Peckham and with a bay window. But no, nothing would do but that my lord and master must be near to his precious city at Mr. Perkup's beck and call. I wonder he doesn't take his bed down to the office and be done with it.
I'm always in of an evening. There's plenty to be done, a fan to nail up, a blind to put straight.
A sash cord to mend.
All of which I can do with my pipe in my mouth. Then our old friends Going and Cummings may drop in without ceremony. Carrie and I are always pleased to see them.
When all said and done, Charlie is a good husband to me. And unlike other men, does not pass the evening at his club, but prefers to be at home with his pipe, entertaining his friends, who call far too often for my liking, or doing jobs about the house. I must count my blessings.
April 3rd, a Going called and fell over the door scraper coming in. Memo, have it mended. April 5th, Cummings called and fell over the scraper going out. As I said to Kerry, I must get the scraper removed, or else I shall get into a scrape.
Yes, dear.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. I don't often make jokes.
April the 6th. Charlie set to laying the old stair carpets we fetched with us from Peckham. Now he will see for himself that...
I'm afraid the old stair carpets are not wide enough to meet the paint on either side. There is nothing for it. We shall have to buy new ones.
As I've been telling him all along, they are too narrow. He will have to match the paint.
Unless, that is, I can match the paint.
April the 9th. Engaged to charwoman, a Mrs. Birrell, on references supplied by Mrs. Late Mockford, painter sergeant. So continues my daily struggle to prevent the house from resembling a coal siding. I have arranged a series of bell signals. One ring for Sarah, two for Mrs. Birrell. That is, when the bells have been mended.
April the 11th. Slight smell of...
The house reeks of paint. Charlie having elected to have the stairs entirely repainted by Mr. Putley, the decorator. He tells me that...
Mr. Putley could not match the colour that is down, as it contains Indian carmine. He spent half a day calling at warehouses.
Since it is dark chocolate, one of the commonest colours to be found, I beg leave to doubt this. I ask Charlie... Has Mr. Passley tried Messrs. Teal, Lake Mox and Painter Sunderman? By the look of their letterheads, they seem very reliable.
Matching paint is men's business, Caroline.
Going dropped in after tea?
To use my parlour as his smoking divan. I'm pleased to say that for once he had his comeuppance from Charlie. Both he and Mr. Cummings have been very tiresome about the smell of paint. On this occasion, as he began his usual sniffing, Charlie said...
You're not going to complain of the smell of paint again, Going?
Mr. Going said.
No, not this time. But I'll tell you what, I distinctly smell dry rot.
To which Charlie retorted,
you're...
without pausing for an instant to compose his reply.
You're...
It seemed to quite trip off his tongue, his head.
You're talking a lot of dry rot yourself.
April the 14th. Sowing some half-hardy annuals in the garden this afternoon, I thought of another joke and called out Terry.
Terry!
My homemade lady's fingers are a particular favourite with Charlie, who will often take them with his tea in preference to Marie Louise biscuits. It was contentedly enough that I was applying myself to turning out a batch this afternoon when...
Terry!
Thinking him to have had an accident, I abandoned by whisking. All Charlie wanted to say was...
I have just discovered we have got a lodging house.
How do you mean?
Look at the borders.
The borders, yes.
Now, borders. Don't you see, Carrie, flower borders, a lodging house borders.
Is that all you wanted to say to me?
Any other time you would have laughed at my little pleasantry.
Certainly at any other time, but not when I'm busy in the kitchen. My lady's fingers mixture was as custard. It's my own fault. I should not have encouraged him by laughing at his joke about dry rot the other day. Now he considers himself a wit.
April the 16th.
Reminded Charlie that the sash cords remain unattended to. He made a great show of examining the cords on the parlour windows, then said...
Yes, I'm afraid they're frayed.
That's what I keep telling you.
I'm afraid they're frayed.
He repeated this several times with increasing emphasis, then took himself off into the garden where I heard him laughing to himself. I sometimes wonder if my husband is a secret drinker. April the 25th, beside myself with rage. His lordship came home bearing two tins of Pinkford's red enamel paint, as advertised.
I hastened through tea, went into the garden, and painted some flower pots.
If there was one job about the house I wanted you to do above all others, it was to paint the flower pots.
Your wish is my command, Carrie dear.
As usual, he took my sarcasm for praise and looked so pleased with himself that my heart melted. I said, oh, Charlie, you've always got some newfangled craze. Then I returned indoors, leaving him painting a brick.
April 26th. Got some more red enamel paint and painted the coal scuttle and the backs of our Shakespeare.
April the 27th, sharp words with Charlie, who has painted the bath vermilion without consulting me. I've never heard of such a thing as a red bath.
It's really a matter of taste, Terry.
However, it's quite obvious to me, as it would be to him if only he read the instructions on the tin before painting everything inside, that Pinkford's paint must either flake or dissolve when introduced to scalding water, whereupon Charlie will have to ask Farmsons to come in and paint the bath white exactly as he should have done in the first place.
April the 28th. Cummings dropped in but said he couldn't stop. He'd only called in to leave the bicycle news as he had done with it.
No sooner had he departed than Mr. Going arrived. Again. Charlie made ever such a droll observation.
I said.
He said.
I said.
Sis.
Doesn't it seem odd that Going's always coming and Cummings always going?
Doesn't it seem odd that one of you is always arriving while the other is always leaving?
April the 29th. Woke up with a fearful headache and symptoms of another cold.
painter's colic.
Decided to take a bath, as hot as I could bear it. Got in. Very hot, but very acceptable. I lay still for some time. On moving my hand above the surface of the water, I experienced the greatest fright I ever received in the whole course of my life. For my hand, as it seemed, was full of blood. My first thought was that I had ruptured an artery and was bleeding to death, and should be discovered looking like a second Barrett, as I remember him at Madame Tussauds. My second thought was to ring the bell, but then I remembered...
No bell to ring!
My third was that, after all, it was nothing but the enamel paint, which had dissolved with boiling water. Got out, resembling a Red Indian. Determined not to say a word to Kerry, but to tell Farmerson to come on Monday
and paint the bath white.
April the 30th.
The proudest day of my life.
Perfectly astounded at receiving an invitation for Carrie and myself from the Lord and Lady Marys in the Mansion House to meet
the representatives of trade and commerce. I shall want a new silk dress, court gloves, fan, Dolly Varden dress shoes, stockings, evening bag and school braids, but otherwise I will make do with what I have got.
Told Mr. Perkup at the office that we had received an invitation to the Mansion House. He said, to my astonishment, that he himself gave in my name to the Lord Mayor's secretary. I felt this rather discounted the value of the invitation. May the 1st. While speaking, incidentally, to Spotch, one of our head clerks, about the Mansion House ball, he said, "Oh, I must, but don't think I shall go." When a vulgar man like Spotch is asked, I feel my invitation is considerably debased.
May the 7th.
Never have I seen my little wife look so lovely.
Oh, thank you, dear.
I thought perhaps the dress was a little too long behind and decidedly too low in front, but Carrie and Mrs. James of Sutton,
my old school friend, Annie Fuller's as was, who came up to assist with my toilette,
assured me with one voice that...
It is à la mode.
We arrived at the Mansion House too early, which was rather fortunate, for I had an opportunity of speaking to his lordship, who graciously condescended to talk with me for some minutes. But I must say I was disappointed to find he did not even know Mr. Perkup. I felt as if we'd been invited to the Mansion House by one who did not himself know the Lord Mayor.
As crowds began to arrive, compared appearances, and concluded that my dress held its own against all but the grandest, and was not too low cut, despite what Charles may think.
I shall never forget the grand sight. My humble pen could never describe it.
Considered it a pity we didn't know anybody, and repeated this thought to Charlie. Isn't it a pity we don't know anybody?
I wish you would stop saying that, Caroline. In any case, isn't that Mr. Frenching from Peckham?
Oh, do leave me.
Proceeded to supper room, where Carrie ate most heartily. For myself, I was so thirsty I could not eat much.
He drank one glass of champagne after another.
Receiving a sharp slap on the shoulder, I turned, and to my amazement, saw Farmerson, our ironmonger. He said in a most familiar way,
"Is it better than Brickfield Terrace, eh?"
I simply looked at him and said coolly,
"I've never expected to see you here,"
he said with a loud, coarse laugh.
"Ha! I like that. If you, why not me?"
To which I retorted,
"Certainly."
I wish I could have thought of something better to say.
Charlie reminded him that he had never sent to paint the bath as requested. Farmerson said,
"Pardon me, Pooter. No shop when we're in company, please."
The evening now began to deteriorate.
Introductions effected, the sheriff was so good as to procure me a glass of champagne.
Averting my eyes only for a moment in order to deal with a boiled custard, I addressed a word to Charles, only to discover that he had deserted me and was chinking glasses with Mr. Farmerson. Stared at him until...
Excuse me, Mark, if I join Mrs. Pooter.
Oh, don't let me take you away from your friends. I'm quite happy standing here alone in a crowd, knowing nobody.
As it takes two to make a quarrel, and this was neither the time nor the place for it, I gave my arm to Carrie and...
tried to make it up to me by asking me, in the most anxious terms, to dance.
I hope my darling little wife will dance the polka with me.
The waltz?
If only for the sake of saying we have danced at the Mansion House as guests of the Lord Mayor.
He could hardly see, let alone dance. Nonetheless.
One, two, three.
Oh, dear. A most unfortunate accident occurred.
In no time at all, he had me over, grazing my elbow and breaking my priceless fan of cashew eagle feathers belonging to...
Mrs. James of Sutton. My head struck the floor with such violence that for a second or two I did not know what had happened.
There was a roar of laughter, and I wished the floor would swallow me up. Then a gentleman named Mr. Darwitz helped me up and escorted me for a restoring sip of wine while Charles was brought back to his senses by his fine friends.
I expressed myself pretty strongly to Farmerson and the others on the danger of having to dance on a plain polished floor.
Mr. Darwitz was most polite and considerate and talked easily of this and that as if the distressing incident had never happened. He used to own a book bindery in Cornhill, but is now in the wholesale stationery line.
Farmerson said,
"Are you going? 'Cause if so, you can give me a lift."
Of the journey home, what with a stench of tobacco smoke, Mr. Farmerson knocking Annie's cashew eagle feather fan out of my hand as I tried to waft away the fumes, and Charles badgering him to come in for a nightcap of Lockinbart whiskey, despite the lateness of the hour, not to mention Mr. Farmerson offering not a farthing towards his share of the cab, I shall say nothing.
Woke up with a most terrible headache. I could scarcely see, and the back of my neck was as if I had given it a crick.
This evening, unable to eat the supper prepared for him, cold veal rolls with fat bacon and forcemeat stuffing, he came out with a cock and bull tale that...
I do believe I've been poisoned by the lobster mayonnaise at the Mansion House last night.
Champagne never did agree with you.
What nonsense you do talk, Caroline. I only had a glass and a half, and you know as well as I do. Carrie!
May the 9th. The Blackfriars Bi-Weekly News contains a long list of the guests at the Mansion House Ball, including even that of Farmerson, our ironmonger. Disappointed to find our names omitted. More than vexed because... we had ordered a dozen copies to send to our friends. Shall write to the editor.
Caroline?
Don't mention the Mansion House Ball to me.
I don't understand you, I'm sure.
Probably not. You were scarcely in a condition to understand anything.
Caroline, that will do.
Don't be so theatrical. It has no effect on me. Reserve that tone for your new friend, Mr. Farmerson, the ironmonger.
Will you excuse me, Caroline?
No, I will not, sir. Now, I get May the 10th, Charles still sulking. He can be like a child sometimes. I told him as much.
You can be like a child sometimes.
Oh, really? May the 12th. The Blackfriars Bi-Weekly News has printed a short list of several names omitted from the guests at the Lord Mayor's Ball, but the stupid people have mentioned us as Mr. and Mrs. C. Porter.
I blame Charlie's illegible signature.
I will have you know, Caroline, that Mr. Perkup considers my copper plate the best in the office.
We are not discussing your precious Mr. Perkup or your precious copper plate, but your absurd signature.
The matter, Caroline, is closed.
We cannot go on like this. It will be better for both of us that I should go and stay for a spell with Annie Fuller's.
No, Mrs. James.
Until the storm clouds have blown over. I sent off a telegram and packed. Overhearing me instructing Sarah on what to look for in a knuckle of veal, Charlie said...
Oh, don't worry about me. I could always dine at the club.
You will have to join one first.
May the 16th. Last few days is terribly dull without Kerry. May the 21st. Hope Cummings or Going will call. Didn't. Called on them. Out. May the 22nd. Welcome postcard from Kerry.
Weather good. Annie.
Now, Mrs. James.
And I, just off to Bon Marché to see demonstrated the new electroplated self-pouring teapot. Forgot to mention that most of your collars are with the laundress. Your loving wife.
Your loving wife. Forgiven at last. May the 24th. Thought of a joke. Question. How should one best buy a clock? Answer. On tick. There's no one to tell it to. May the 25th. Carry home again. Hurrah! She looks wonderfully well, except that the sun has caught her nose.
Home, sweet home again. I would not change my dear little home for all the world. Unless Charlie would agree to return to Peckham.
June the 4th. To Mr. and Mrs. Cummings to spend the quiet evening. Mrs. Cummings sang 5 or 6 songs, The Garden of Sleep being the best in my humble judgment. Then Carrie was persuaded to sing...
Oh, no. Well, Pretty Mockingbird by Sir Henry Bishop. Pretty Mockingbird, that's all my name.
If Gary had been in better voice, I don't think professionals could have sung it better.
Oh. July 31st. Posted to our dear son Willie, who is with the bank at Oldham, the volume he has asked for especially for his 20th birthday.
Spink and Wicklow's Principles of Banking.
On the Stage and Off by Mr. Jerome K. Jerome.
August the 4th. The first post brought a nice letter from our dear son Willie, acknowledging a trifling birthday present from his mother.
No sooner had I read it for the 11th or 12th time than a hackney carriage pulled up at the door.
Went to our ratter, amazed.
Who should step out of it but Willie himself?
He said he got leave from the bank, and as Monday is a holiday, he thought to give us a little surprise.
Oh, by the by, did I tell you I've got my first name, William, and taken the second name, Lupin? In fact, I'm only known at Oldham as Lupin Pooter. If you were to willy me there, they wouldn't know what you meant.
I am delighted and honoured that my only son should wish to be known by his mother's maiden name. It is a proud and distinguished name, and one that goes back into the mists of history.
August?
The Berkshire Lupins, as my branch is, have graves in Reading in district, dating as far back as 1709. There may be earlier Lupins, but they are indecipherable.
August?
The Essex Lupins, mainly small holding stock, may be traced back to the 17th century, so I have been told.
August.
There have been many outstanding Lupins. Edward Lupin was a member of the Metropolitan Board of Works. Alexander Lupin was at the University of Durham, later to become the general manager of the Mutual Steam Boiler Insurance Company. Well, August the 6th.
Bank holiday.
No sign of Willie at Lupin at breakfast.
Or at dinner.
Willie!
Lupin?
Sorry. Lupin!
A reminder my son that little that we have seen of him, if he was to catch the 5:30 train, he must leave in an hour.
Lupin said...
Oh, look here, Governor. It's not you speeding about the bush. I tendered my resignation at the bank.
Not before time.
How dare you, sir? How dare you take such a serious step without consulting me?
I didn't think it was...
You will sit down immediately and write a note at my dictation withdrawing your resignation and amply apologising.
Now he is at liberty to offer his services to one of the Lombard Street banks.
It's no use. If you want the good old truth, I've got the chuck.
Or even the Bank of England. I care not so long as he lives at home where he belongs.
The ambition of my life would be to get him into Mr. Perkup's firm.
September the 5th. Despite his many influential acquaintanceships in the city, Charlie's having difficulty in finding a place for Lupin. Our son is not much at home these days.
He has to catch up on London life, as he puts it.
I wish you would tell us where he goes.
October the 30th. I should very much like to know who has willfully torn the last 5 or 6 weeks out of my diary. It is perfectly monstrous.
He at once suspected me. I should like to know why.
I asked Carrie if she knew anything about it.
Oh, really?
That is not an answer to my question.
Waving his arms in a grandiose manner, he knocked over a vase given to me for our wedding by Mrs. Burnside of Dalston.
Charlie!
Carrie was very upset.
I let him believe I was upset. In truth, I never liked Mrs. Burstead or her vase, and it's a relief to see the back of it.
November the 3rd. Good news at last. Mr. Perkup has got an appointment for Lupin. Oh, how my mind is relieved. Went to Lupin's room to take the good news to him. But he was in bed. Very seedy.
Declining breakfast, Lupin explained that he had last night been elected a member of an amateur dramatic club called the Holloway Comedians, and though it was a pleasant evening, he had sat in a draught and got neuralgia in the head.
Had up a special bottle of port in the evening.
We filled our glasses and Charlie said...
Lupin, my boy, I have some good and unexpected news for you. Mr. Perkup has procured you an appointment.
Lupin said...
A good biz.
And we drained our glasses. Lupin then said...
Fill up the glasses again, for I have some good and unexpected news for you.
Well, I hope we shall think it good news, Lupin.
It's all right, Major. I'm engaged to be married.
Oh, Carrie. November the 4th, Carrie and I troubled about that mere boy Lupin getting engaged to be married without consulting us or anything. He tells us that the lady's name is Daisy Mutler, that she is the nicest, prettiest, and most accomplished girl he ever met, and that he will wait 50 years for her if he must. Otherwise, we know nothing about the young lady.
Miss Daisy Mutler resides at Avoncrest, number 17, Athergrove, with her parents and brother. Chancing to pass along Athergrove on my afternoon walk, I could not help but notice the house. It is a double-fronted residence with a porch and claret glass surrounds to the bay windows with engraved corner sunbursts.
Lupin?
Miss Mutler is older than Lupin, although he will not say by how many summers. She is neither tall nor short, but of the medium height, I gather.
Lupin?
She occupies herself with charitable works for unfortunates at the North London Outcasts Haven.
Lupin
was introduced to Miss Mutler by her brother, Mr. Frank Mutler, of the Holloway Comedians Amateur Dramatic Club.
Lupin?
Miss Mutler herself does not indulge in amateur theatricals. She has not been engaged before that we are aware of. That is the sum of our knowledge of Miss Mutler.
for the present.
Thank you, my dear. Lupin further said, with much warmth, that he lived with an object now, to make Daisy Mutler Daisy Pooter, and he would guarantee she would not disgrace the family of Pooter.
It seems only yesterday since I was pushing our little son in his bassinet across Peckham High.
November the 5th, Lupin went with me to the office and had a long conversation with Mr. Perkup, the result of which was that he accepted a clerkship in the firm of Job Cleanands and Company, stock and share brokers. In the evening, we went round to the Cummings to have a few fireworks. It began to rain, and I thought it rather dull.
A damp squib?
Yeah, a complete waste of time and money.
It can be very dense sometimes. November the 9th. The house next door standing empty. Whom should I see being escorted up the path by the agent but the Mrs. Tipper, acquaintances from our Peckham days. They are mindful to move to Holloway to be near their brother, Mr. Oswald Tipper, who has a veterinary practice here. But next door does not suit.
November the 11th. Returned home to find the house in a most disgraceful uproar. Carrie appeared very frightened, while Sarah...
My maid?
...was excited and crying. The charwoman, Mrs. Biddle, who had evidently been drinking...
She's been at the Rock and Bowl Whiskey.
...was shouting at the top of her voice that...
I'm no thief, I'm a respectable married woman, I am. One that has to work hard for a living, and I'll smack anyone's face what's it's different.
I ascertained that the cause of the row was that Sarah had accused Mrs. Biddle of using the missing pages of my diary to wrap up some kitchen fat and leavings.
My Charlie took command of the situation.
Mrs. Biddle had slapped Sarah's face, saying...
I've never took no leavings, never. Cause there's never no leavings to take. Ooh!
I ordered Sarah back to her work and requested Mrs. Biddle to go home at...
If only Mr. Perkup could have seen him. When the occasion demands, my husband can be as masterful as the captain of any ship.
November the 12th, Sunday. Coming home from church, we met Lubin, Daisy Mutler and her brother. Daisy was introduced to us, and we walked home together.
Miss Mutler is not, after all, of the medium height. She's what I would call large, being big-boned, as well as a good 3 inches taller than Lupin. Her dress, although by no means flash, was not, I thought, subdued enough for a Sunday. She's too old for him.
By at least 8 years.
I should say 10. Her hair is no stranger to the automatic curler. However, I found her sensible and respectful in conversation, although given to giggling at the merest pleasantry. This is probably nerves. Mm. Taking one thing with another, Miss Mutler seems a nice young woman who makes the best of a naturally plain appearance.
Spent the afternoon writing invitations, as we have asked Miss Daisy Mutler and her brother over on Wednesday to meet a few of our friends.
November the 14th. Nearly all our friends have sent word that they take pleasure in...
Or in some cases have the honour...
...of accepting our invitation to a reception at the Laurels tomorrow. Oh, Mr. Perkup!
If able to get away from a previous engagement in Kensington.
An unspecified number of the Holloway comedians accepted orally with a message conveyed by Lupin.
Good biz! Lead us to it!
Mr. Darwitz greatly regrets... his inability to attend.
Annual dinner of Master Stationer's Company. So he says.
The entire evening spent rearranging the furniture and moving our Japanese screen.
If we moved it once, we must have moved it 100 times. After wrapping my hand badly, we decided to leave it be.
November the 15th. Our first important party since we've been in this house.
The supper room looked ever so nice. And Carrie truly said...
We need not be ashamed of its being seen by Mr. Perkup, should he honour us by coming.
Carrie looked a picture.
Miss Mutler wore a dress of pillar-box red sateen, which even Annie Fuller's...
Now, Mrs. James of Sutton...
declared was cut too low, and without a shred of lace to cover her shoulders, which are very large and freckled.
The first arrival was Gowing, who, with his usual taste, greeted me with...
Hello, Poonter. Why, your trousers are too short.
I simply said...
Very likely. And you will find my temper short also.
We had some music.
Lupin, who never left Daisy's side for a moment, raved over her singing off Someday. It was pretty enough.
Out of tune. Supper was at 10. Mrs. Cummings and Gowing ate as if they'd not had a meal for a month.
I told Carrie to keep something back in case Mr. Perkup should honour us. Gowing annoyed me very much.
And me.
By filling a large tumbler of champagne and drinking it straight off. Tried to keep a bottle back, but Lupin got hold of it.
And took it to Daisy Mutler.
Stillbrook then amused with a song.
What have you done with your cousin John?
During which Lupin and Frank disappeared. Asked where they were, Mr. Watson of the Holloway Comedians said...
It's a case of, oh, what a surprise.
We were directed to form a circle, which we did. Mr. Watson then said...
I have much pleasure in introducing the celebrated Blondin Donkey.
Frank and Lupin then bounded into the room. Lupin with his face whitened like a clown, and Frank with a hard throat tied round his waist.
Now we howled! Why? Mr. Perkup?
He would not leave his hat. I apologise for the foolery, but Mr. Perkup said...
Oh, it seems amusing.
I could see he was not a bit amused. There was no champagne left.
Mr. Gowing saw to that.
Mr. Perkup said he required nothing but a glass of soda water. We had run out of that as well. Mr. Perkup said to Carrie with a smile...
I really require nothing, Mrs. Pooter. I am most pleased to see you and your husband in your own home.
There cannot be many clerks in the city whose principals would bother to cross London just to drink their health in soda water. Had there been any to drink, it shows how my husband is regarded.
I took Mr. Perkup out to his carriage.
As they went out, I saw that Mr. Perkup had stepped on an open jam puff that must have dropped from somebody's plate. The encumbrance cannot have escaped his notice, his dress boots having thin soles, yet neither by word nor gesture did he intimate his awareness of treading cherry jam into my carpet. Whatever his deficiencies as a man of commerce, Mr. Perkup is a gentleman.
I felt despondent as I went back to the room, and I told Carrie that the party... had been a failure.
Nonsense. It was a great success.
I drank two glasses of port and felt much better.
Carrie, come here.
Oh, Charlie, what a spoony old thing you are. And so saying, I squeezed his hands. Quite forgetting he'd trapped it in the Japanese screen.
November the 16th. Liverish.
Champagne poisoning. Again. Great excitement at what sounded like the first lifeguards clattering along Brickfield Terrace. Drew back the curtains to see no fewer than three pantechnicons outside, the house next door having been let at last.
Good quality furniture.
The piece de resistance was one of the new Wenham Lake ice safes. Oh, I've seen them in Merryweathers. November the 17th. At breakfast, asked Charlie if he didn't think the blancmange left over from our party a little warm and sour to the taste. I said...
I have been wondering about an ice safe. It would be a boon in hot weather and would pay for itself in the end.
Then when that day comes, we will order one and let the ice safe settle up.
November the 19th. At 9:12 of that evening, Lupin entered the house with a face that could have come down from a poster for a melodrama.
He drank off a good wine glass full of Lochinvar whiskey.
Neat.
Then threw himself into a chair and smoked moodily. Presently, I asked lightly,
I hope Daisy is well. Lupin said.
You mean Miss Mutler? I don't know whether she's well or not. But please, never to mention her name again in my presence.
A mother's forebodings confirmed. December 26th.
Boxing Day.
Mr. Cummings and Mr. Going to supper again. To my surprise, Charlie allowed himself to be persuaded to sing.
From Waterloo to somewhere else in all the mathematical.
January the 1st. The new year commences with a most important event. Getting back to the office after my midday dinner, I was told that Mr. Perkup desired to see me at once. After I had waited for quite 20 minutes, he laid down his pen and said,
Mr. Porter, you have been with us nearly 21 years, and we intend making a special promotion in your favour.
I need not say how dear Carrie received the joyful news.
At last we can have a Wenham Lake ice safe.
Be assured, Caroline, I have set my face against ice safes.
January the 4th.
Mr. Perkup sent for me and told me that my position would be that of
one of the senior clerks.
I was overjoyed.
I thought you'd been a senior clerk all along.
It would appear not.
He still doesn't know what his new salary is to be. Poor dear Charlie.
January the 5th. I can scarcely write the news. Mr. Perkup has told me that my salary would be raised by
100
pounds.
He was expecting 20 at most.
I sent Sarah,
my maid,
ran to the grocer's for a bottle of Jackson Frere champagne. Carrie said,
it is an inducement to prevent you throwing down your pen and taking your abilities elsewhere.
No, dear. It is the reward for 21 years tireless and faithful service to a good master.
He makes himself sound like a dray horse.
Lupin then rapped the table and said,
my governor, as a reward to me, has allotted me £5 worth of shares in a really good thing. Result, today I have made £200.
£100? £200? Where will it end?
Shopping.
First to Merriweather's, where I ordered a new chimney glass for the parlour and obtained an illustrated price list of the Wenham Lake prize medal ice safes. Bought a pair of Armstrong's Jubilee braces for Charlie at Peter Robinson's, where I took morning coffee and a macaroon.
It is 100 a year, not 1,000.
Then to Darwitz, the wholesale stationer's, to inquire the cost of binding up my completed set of Lady Cartmel in blue cloth with deckled edges. While I waited at the trade counter, Mr. Darwitz came out, every bit as tall and straight-backed as I remembered him. He returned my bow, but looked mystified. I said,
I am sure you have not forgotten the Lord Mayor's ball already, Mr. Darwitz.
Forgive me, dear lady. I was lost in a brown study. It's Mrs. Twentyman, is it not?
Mrs. Pooter.
Of course. How are you, Mrs. Pooter?
Unaccountably, I was seized by what Lupin would call a fit of the blues on the bus home. But cheered up when dear Charlie brought me back a little present.
Oh, Charlie. Another bangle. I shall soon have enough bangles to start a hoopla store.
February the 18th.
The Mrs. Tipper paid a call asking if they might look over the house. Miss Tipper Senior seemed strangely interested in how we got our big wardrobe upstairs.
Shouldered in half, of course.
Of course.
February the 20th.
Bless my soul, Caroline. Great failure of stock and share deals. Mr. Joe Cleanhands absconded.
What a blessing.
I fancy he was good about the disappearance of Lupin's employer.
It is good for Lupin. Mr. Cleanhands was never a good influence.
March the 2nd. We see little of Lupin since the announcement of Daisy Mutler's engagement.
To Mr. Murray Posh, the 3 shillings hats chap.
He sleeps all day and spends his evenings at music halls.
Last night he came in very late, singing that he was...
Quite all right, a titanic. On Esmeralda's elder rose, elderberry wine.
He continued to sing long after he must have gone to bed. I do not like Lupin singing in bed. It is not healthy.
March the 21st. My great dream has been realised. Today, my good master, Mr. Perkup, sent for Lupin and took him into the firm.
I feel as the wives of colliers do, when their sons are obliged to follow their fathers into the pit cage.
What a generous master Mr. Perkup is. My cup runneth over. My boy, in the same office as myself. We can go down together by bus, come home together, and together put a nail in here, or a nail in there, or in the summer, paint a plant pot. It's all I've ever wanted.
April the 8th. Mr. Oswald Tipper, the brother of the Mrs. Tipper, was good enough to call, though unexpectedly.
I believe you have a fondness for Peckham, Mrs. Pooter.
I have happy memories of Peckham, Mr. Tipper, and should like to live there again one day.
Do you know at all where my sisters live? In Stone Quarry Terrace? They have asked me to say they would like to invite you there for luncheon one day.
I shall be honoured.
I have what you may consider a curious proposal, Mrs. Poulter. The fact is that my sisters have taken a great fancy to your house.
My house?
Being deaf, the proximity of the railway troubles them not. But I am given to understand that it vexes you greatly. The proposition I wish to put to you is this, Mrs. Booker. You see, my sisters are under the gnawing years now. So I can explain things to you. Now, all things being equal, how would it be if you were to exchange houses?
I was flabbergasted. Either the proposal was harebrained, or it was a stroke of genius. You must give me time to think. And, of course, I shall have to consult my husband.
May the 13th, a day of terrible misfortune. Lupin is discharged from Mr. Perkup's office.
It appears he's been so remiss as to recommend to one of the firm's most valued clients, Mr. Crowbillon, who was dissatisfied with Perkup's, that he should take his business to the firm of Messrs. Gilderson and Co.
The name of Pooter will be blackened from one end of the square mile to the other. I'll have to spend tomorrow at home, composing a letter to Mr. Crowbillon, apologising for Lupin's ill advice.
Lupin himself seems quite unconcerned. He came home wearing one of Posh's 3 shilling hats. I thought he would sooner walk the streets bareheaded, but no. He and Mr. Posh are the greatest of friends again.
Dear Mr. Crowbillon.
I have not set foot in Peckham since we left our dear little house in Shank's Place over a year ago. The Mrs. Tipper's residence is quite charming. Bow windows back and front and no railway. Instead, the garden slopes gently down to the mellow old wall of Acthorpe, Holliman and Smedley's Jamboree Ales Brewery.
Why, dear Mr. Crowbillon.
We were just 4 for luncheon, the Mrs. Tipper's other guest being their next-door neighbour, Mrs. Batch.
Esteemed sir.
On the excuse to Mrs. Batch that I was interested in rooms, Miss Tipper Jr. conducted me on a thorough tour of the establishment.
With my renewed respects and apologies, I remain, my dear Mr. Crowbillon, ever your obedient servant.
I noticed a tin of Sheen's Murderum cockroach fumigating fluid on a scullery shelf, but was otherwise favourably impressed. If only I dare tell Charlie of my expedition, I could be very happy in Stone Quarry Terrace.
May the 18th.
Hello. See this letter, Carrie? It is that of Mr. Frenching of Peckham.
Peckham?
two intended guests having let him down. He wishes us to dine with him this evening.
We cannot possibly accept at such short notice.
We must accept. It is to meet Mr. Hartfur Huttle, the distinguished journalist who has come all the way from America.
He's not come especially?
I will brook no argument, Caroline. I have written our telegram of acceptance.
Very well. Then you must buy me a new dress.
What a journey it is from Holloway to Peckham. Why do people live such a long way off?
The company, which was attended by a hired waiter, was drawn not from the mere confines of Peckham, but from the entire metropolis. Mr. Hartfur Huttle, the guest of honour, seized command of Mr. Franching's table at once.
Oh, I wish I could remember even a quarter of his brilliant conversation.
I ventured to ask,
and what, Mr. Huttle, is your opinion of the ice safe, which I've been told is the coming thing?
Anyone who was told that the ice safe is the coming thing, ma'am, has the right to ask, if it is only now coming, why was it not here before?
By and by, I shall remind Charlie of that speech. May the 19th.
A letter from Mr. Crowbillon. Sir, I totally disagree with you. Your son, in the course of 5 minutes' conversation, displayed more intelligence than your firm has done during the last 5 years. What will Mr. Perkup say?
Send a letter for a Lupin from Gilderson and Co.
Enclosing a cheque for £25 commission for introducing Mr. Crowbillon and offering him a position at £200 a year.
Here's a second hard fur hattle. N.B. He's also using Bay Rum again. And when he goes out at night, sports a buttonhole. I expect we should be vouchsafed the lady's name in due course. Mr. Oswald Tipper. He said he had ventured to call, seeing as he'd been in the next street attending to a grey parrot. I said in a low voice, I am sorry, but I cannot receive you, Mr. Tipper, as my husband and son are in the house, and they know nothing of our business yet. Mr. Tipper asked, had I formed a favourable impression of his sister's house? I told him, we cannot discuss it on the doorstep. You must go.
May the 25th. Wrote a satirical letter to the laundress. I said, you have returned the handkerchiefs without the colour. Perhaps you will return either the colour or the value of the handkerchiefs.
I've got the heart to tell him that the laundress cannot read. June the 12th. The Mrs. Tipper called. While Miss Tipper Senior was attending to her toilette, Miss Tipper Junior asked if she could speak in confidence on a delicate matter.
Oh, Mrs. Pooter, it has become vital that we exchange houses, for without my knowledge, my dear sister has already sawn the wardrobe in half.
June the 29th. Lupin has taken furnished apartments at Bayswater to be near his friends, the newlyweds, Mr. and Mrs. Murray Posh.
Making his fond farewells, our dear boy reeked of bay rum.
July the 3rd. We were invited to 8 o'clock dinner at Lupin's rooms, and Mr. and Mrs. Murray Posh and Mr. Posh's sister, Miss Lillian Posh,
whom he has never previously mentioned,
are to be the other guests. We were introduced to Miss Posh, whom Lupin called Lily Girl, as if he'd known her all his life. The way of young people nowadays.
Lupin and Miss Posh are in love. She was forever pushing him and giggling and giving him playful slaps. I may say, however, that I do not approve of young women smoking.
On arriving home at 11:15, we found a hansom cab waiting with a letter. Dear Mr. Pooter, come down to the Victoria Hotel without delay, whatever the hour. Important, yours truly, Hartfur Huttle.
He came staggering back at 2 o'clock, having a goodness knows what to drink on top of all the champagne he was swilling down at Lupin's, and babbling about some friend of Mr. Huttle's being able to put a large amount of business in Mr. Perkup's way. I made Charlie drink a pint of warm water to help his liver.
July the 11th. One of the happiest days of my life.
July the 11th. It is the last straw.
Today, while I was taking tea in the garden, an excursion train steamed into view and, with a hissing and a grinding of brakes and a shuddering of couplings, came to a halt in obedience to a new semaphore signal. It was packed with East End hobbledehoys and their donors, who commenced to lean out of windows, cupping their hands and shouting,
"Oh, my! Ain't we the one? Watch her, your ladyship! Easy! Shall we have afternoon tea with our nibs?"
My mind is made up. This very evening I shall sit down calmly with Charlie and inform him that I am positively desirous of removing to Stone Quarry Terrace, Peckham. Should he demur, he will find a rat in his nightshirt.
This afternoon Mr. Perkup sent for me. Referring to my business with Hard Fur Huttle, he said,
"My faithful servant, I will not dwell on the important service you have done our firm. I propose to purchase the freehold of your house and present it to the most honest and most worthy man it has ever been my lot to meet."
I could not speak. I sent a telegram to Carrie, a thing I've never done before, advising her of our good fortune.
Thus, I am doomed to live out my days in Brickfield Terrace.
On arriving home, I found Carrie crying with joy.
"Dear good Charlie, I shall make the best of this misfortune and make the Laurels as pretty a little home as it can be."
I sent Sarah round to the grocer's for 2 bottles of Jackson Frere.
"It is a pity on such a hot day that it will not be chilled. It never is."
"Carrie, my dear, I have a confession. I did not come straight home with my news. I made a diversion to Merryweather's."
"Charlie, you never..."
"That I did, with what in our former circumstances would have been the next quarter's rent. Sarah, bring it in, if you please."
"Oh, Wenham Lake, I say..."
"A proviso. In the limited space available, Jackson Frere must always take precedence over Blancmange."
"Dearest Charlie..." The last post brought Charlie a letter from Lupin. He read it in silence, then said,
"Hello. Here's one more reason for us to celebrate. Lupin writes that he is engaged to be married to Lily girl. And the wedding is to be next month. Carrie."
"Oh, I know, dear. I know."
In Mr. and Mrs. Nobody by Keith Waterhouse, Michael Williams was Charles Pooter and Judy Dench, Carrie Pooter. Between them, they also played the parts of Lupin Pooter, Daisy Mutler, Mr. Going, Mr. Cummings, Mrs. Biddle, Mr. Perkup, Mr. Farmerson, Mr. Darwitz, Mr. Watson, Mr. Tipper, Miss Tipper Jr., and Mr. Hardfur Huttle. Incidental music was composed by Colin Sell and played by Colin Sell and Peter Ripper. The sound balance was by Chris Lewis, and the production assistant was Joe Hill. First directed for the stage by Ned Sherrin, this BBC World Service radio production was adapted and directed by Gordon House.